Hi, this is Lisa DeLay, and you are listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. This is Soul School Lesson 77, You Will Marry the Wrong Person. Thank you so much for listening to me today, and it is really a pleasure to have you. A shocking thing has happened for June. The people who are downloading from the country of Japan have outnumbered the people who are downloading the program from the United States of America. I have no idea why. It may have something to do with the algorithms and the iTunes reviews, sort of luring people in from Japan more than the United States. I really hope people from the United States start representing and writing reviews, but thank you so much to my Japanese listeners. I am very thankful and I'm really delighted that you're listening. So today I'm going to be talking a little bit about marriage. If you're single and you want to be paired up, if you're looking for a soulmate, if you are already married, if you are happily married, if marriage is or if you think you may have married the wrong person, or you are looking for someone else other than your spouse, for anyone who is lonely, this episode is for you. It really covers everyone because it is talking about relationships and connection and loneliness. And it features the work of Alain de Botton and his article that he wrote last year in the New York Times. It was the number one article in the New York Times last year, in 2016. Now, an article about marriage entitled Why You Will Marry the Wrong Person is kind of a strange article to be in the top number one spot in the New York Times. But what's more remarkable about that is that 2016 was an election year in the United States. So the news was completely captivated around the Republican primaries in particular, and then the Hillary and Bernie race that was happening, and then of course Hillary versus Trump. And this dominated the news, especially with the circus surrounding Trump, because he was such a spectacularly entertaining candidate and eventual winner in 2016. So the fact that an article in the New York Times about marrying the wrong person would capture the attention of more readers than any other article is really remarkable. So I will be putting a link in the show notes to this very article to have you read it for yourself. It is really fascinating and very insightful. And I'm going to be reading just a portion of it and also giving some of my own reflections and insights on it myself. So for a little bit of background on me and why I would think this article is interesting at all is that I felt very unsuited to be married. And I read a bunch of books before I got married at 23 years old, right out of college. And my parents had divorced, and I thought marriage should be entered with trepidation and careful consideration. And I wanted to pick a person who I thought would be calm and well-suited to be a father and would be just a person I could count on, loyal. And I feel like I made a very good choice in my selection. We read marriage books together, and I didn't enter marriage romantically half-blind, as some people do with these romantic notions of, oh, if we love each other, everything will be fine. I don't think I entered marriage with those types of rapturous blindness that some people do. And I know plenty of people who have fell for the fairy tale, who've fallen for the idea that, oh, I've met my soulmate and everything will be wonderful, and have had that crashing down on them. I didn't enter marriage that way. I tried to enter it with as clear a head as possible, lovingly with another person I wanted to spend the rest of my life with, and have found it to be a whole mixed bag of things. Very joyful, very positive sometimes. I married in many ways my opposite, me being an extrovert and him being a calm introvert. Me being from a very chaotic childhood and my parents have broken up, to him being from a much more stable family environment where his parents are still together and he doesn't see marriage as something that could be destroyed, at least in his own personal experience. And so I felt like that I really had something really going for me. And we still, after 22 years that we recently celebrated, experience a stable and committed, loving marital relationship. But like anything in life, it has its ups and downs, and it can be, you know, average and banal, and it can be problematic. We can have fights, and sometimes we have moments of real connection and joy. I thought this article by Elaine was just fantastic, and everybody should read it. I wanted to read a little bit of it to you. And also, when I heard it myself, when I heard Alain de Botton on a couple of different podcasts, I found his point of view extremely refreshing. And in a strange way, he has a strange sort of pessimism that offers, oddly, hope. And I really appreciated it because it lets us think of our imperfections as normal, and in a sense lets us off the hook to be more hopeful and do the best we can in our circumstances. I really liked it, and I think as you hear what he's written, and as I read this to you and as I reflect on it a little bit, I think hopefully you will find some hope as well, whether you're single and looking for someone, that you won't romanticize it and idealize this as much as you have, or whether you're in a marriage that can be problematic, or maybe you are in the perfect marriage and this will make no sense to you, you can just pass this along to someone else because you are a rare one indeed. Alain de Botton's article is called Why You Will Marry the Wrong Person. It was published May 28th, 2016. And I'm going to read just the last portion. All of it is excellent, but I'm not going to spoil it all for you because I'd like you to go and read it for yourself. You can either do a search, or I would love to encourage you to read the show notes at patreon.com/sparkmymuse. There will be a direct link to this very specific page of show notes in the description for this podcast. And when you do that, you will also support the show. And he's talking here about some of the mistakes we make when we go into a long-term marriage relationship, or even really a long-term commitment with someone. And he talks about loneliness and some of these mistakes we make, sometimes hoping that we've found someone to connect with completely forever. He says, we make mistakes too because we are so lonely. No one can be in an optimal frame of mind to choose a partner when remaining single feels unbearable. We have to be wholly at peace with the prospect of many years of solitude in order to be appropriately picky. Otherwise, we risk loving no longer being single, rather more than we love the partner who spared us that fate. Finally, we marry to make a nice feeling permanent. We imagine that marriage will help us to bottle the joy we felt when the thought of proposing first came to us. Perhaps we were in Venice, on a lagoon, in a motorboat, when the evening sun throwing glitter across the sea, chatting about aspects of our souls no one ever seemed to have grasped before, with the prospect of dinner in a risotto place. A little later, we married to make such sensations permanent, but failed to see that there were no solid connection between these feelings and the institution of marriage. Indeed, marriage tends decisively to move us on to another, very different and more administrative plane, which perhaps unfolds in a suburban house with a long commute, maddening children who kill the passion from which they emerged. The only ingredient in common is the partner, and that might have been the wrong ingredient to bottle. The good news is that it doesn't matter if we find we have married the wrong person. We mustn't abandon him or her. The only founding romantic idea upon which the Western understanding of marriage has been based the last 250 years, that perfect being exists who can meet all our needs and satisfy our every yearning. We need to swap the romantic view of a tragic and at points comedic awareness that every human will frustrate, anger, annoy, madden, and disappoint us. And we will, without any malice, do the same to them. There can be no end to our sense of emptiness and incompleteness. But none of this is unusual or grounds for divorce. Choosing whom to commit ourselves to is merely a case of identifying which particular variety of suffering we would most like to sacrifice ourselves for. This philosophy of pessimism offers a solution to a lot of distress and agitation around marriage. It might sound odd, but pessimism relieves the excessive imaginative pressure that our romantic culture places upon marriage. The failure of one particular partner to save us from our grief and melancholy is not an argument against that person, and no sign that a union deserves to fail or be upgraded. The person who is best suited to us is not the person who shares our every taste, he or she doesn't exist, but the person who can negotiate differences in taste intelligently, the person who is good at disagreement, rather than some notional idea of perfect complementarity. It is the capacity to tolerate differences with generosity that is the marker of the, quote, not overly wrong, unquote, person. Compatibility is an achievement of love. It must not be its precondition. Romanticism has been unhelpful to us, a harsh philosophy. It has made a lot of what we go through in a marriage seem exceptional and appalling. We end up lonely and convinced that our union, with its imperfections, is not, quote, normal, unquote. We should learn to accommodate ourselves to, quote, wrongness, unquote, striving always to adopt a more forgiving, humorous, and kindly perspective on its multiple examples in our lives and in our partners. So what this article goes on to say is that when we locate in our partners something we resent or don't like or disagree with or get frustrated with, we're locating in them something that we are full of ourselves. We have those things that are those qualities that are also aggravating and difficult to live with. But romanticism, especially in the books and the movies and the fairy tales, tells us that someone out there exists who we can connect with fully, who won't irritate us, and that actually could happen. And it's false. People are so full of problems and weaknesses, and at times, or when we even first meet them, we can think that those qualities don't exist, or they might meet our every need or really understand our souls, but people can only understand us a little bit of the time, occasionally. We can't even begin to understand ourselves all that well, and we are hidden even to ourselves. So the idea of being generous with each other and not looking for that upgrade. What winds up happening sometimes is there's novelty. We look for novelty. Our friends seem more bearable, possibly, or a mistress or an affair, a fling might seem exciting and more pleasurable to us because we don't have to have any of the banal and mundane qualities of a domestic long-term partnership. And so we never really know anyone so deeply as we do our spouse. But those are all romantic notions that aren't deep and mature and have that quality that marriage has. And so marriage has all the qualities of regular life and the ups and downs, and that is actually normal and good. And to have a little bit of pessimism in the sense can give us hope. So the pessimism being, I will not find somebody who is a soulmate, or I will not find somebody I can connect with truly, means that everything is normal, is actually a way to free yourself from the obligation of perfection and happiness. Pure 100% of the time happiness within your marriage gives you a chance to breathe easier and to let your partner off the hook. I thought that was a really mature and a deeper way of understanding marriage and the person that you're connected with, because we shouldn't be expecting that or resenting that in the other person. We should be living with them graciously, and that gives them permission and expectation to do the same for us. I mean, that's really what love actually is. It's a choice every day to treat somebody with the kind of kindness that you would want to be treated with yourself. I really admire Alain de Botton. He also runs a company called The School of Life, which is kind of a lot of education and wisdom for everyday living. And it's worth checking out. He was raised in an environment of a lot of emotional coldness and didn't feel like he had a lot of tools that would have been helpful wisdom and helpful education in regular life. So he has developed that for himself along the way and for others. So I will put show note details in there with all those links to his work. I would love to have him on the show. If you know him, you can tell him how much I'd love to have him on the show, and I've been trying to contact him to have him on as a guest. We'll see how that works, because sometimes these things do work out. Thank you so much for listening today. There will be plenty of fantastic guests over the summer, so stay tuned. The next guest will be Padre Gotuma. He's fantastic. He's a theologian, a poet, and a peace worker. And I know you will deeply enjoy him. And he has a lovely, lovely Irish accent that is just, oh, delicious, delicious. So I wish you a very good week. Thank you so much for listening.